Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Toby Mathis here with the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast. Today I'm joined by Aaron Adams at Alpine. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Cool. Hey, this is actually going to be fun because I've known Aaron for a lot of years. Our companies have worked together, and it's one of those things where familiarity is kind of a fun one when you're doing these types of formats. So I'm just going to jump right out the gate. Aaron, give me just a thumbnail sketch of your background. I know you came out of Vegas. So I want everybody to get an idea of who you are.
I did. I grew up in Las Vegas. My dad was a casino executive, went to high school in Jersey, came back out to the West Coast for college, undergrad in Utah. My wife and I moved to Southern California in 1999. She was pursuing grad school and I got accepted to a master's degree in business program at Cal Poly. While I was working on my MBA, I decided to teach high school for a few years. I ended up teaching 4 years of high school. Loved it. I loved teaching, loved coaching. And while teaching, I caught an infomercial late one night. It was the old Carlton Sheets No Money Down program.
Holy cow. That is a while ago.
I actually found it on YouTube, the full 90-minute infomercial a few months ago. And I was captivated by this concept because I had never been exposed to real estate education of any kind. And it just really pulled me in. And I called the 800 number and there was no way at 3 a.m. that I was going to spend $4,000 on his DVDs and videos.
It was $4,000? I always thought it was like $99 or something.
No, it was $4,000, man. It was like 12 books, 12 DVDs, VHS starter tape. It was like the deluxe package. So I got on eBay and found the 1989 Carlton Sheets with cassettes for $100. So that's what I bought. And that came in the mail and it was worthless. It was missing cassette tapes and was outdated. I went to Barnes & Noble and went to the business section and bought like 6 books on flipping houses. First one I read was Rich Dad Poor Dad by Kiyosaki. And ironic, I just got in the mail today a contract for my first real book. John Wiley and Sons sent me over a book deal contract. We've been going back and forth for about 8 months now. And it's called Tips, Tricks, Foreclosures, and Flips, Secrets of a Millionaire Landlord.
Very cool. I like it. Yeah. So you're writing you've written books before. You say this is your first real one, which means you got a publisher on this one.
Yeah, I've gone from Pinocchio Publishing. Now I'm a real boy. I'm a...
Not made of wood. Yeah. So you got into real estate. Now, for those people who don't know, like Aaron, you manage well in excess. Is it over 3,000 properties or thereabouts?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So we have 3,000 single family homes in 5 markets, a handful of apartment buildings, 6 mobile home parks, and 20 Airbnbs.
Okay, so just a couple pieces of property.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Aaron's very accomplished. And when you're acquiring your properties, I want to hear a little bit about the mobile homes too, because I know that's something you guys are getting into. But on the single families, did you rehab every single one of those? Or are some of those typical landlord, they come over? Or are these ones that you actually that you did the rehab on as well?
Yeah, we, for years, sometimes I buy a property foreclosure auction or off MLS or from another investor and then inherit a tenant. And that is just, maybe 1% of the time it's worked out well. It's just different expectations. And so, what one investor says is turnkey is completely relative. So we're to the point now where we rehab every house comprehensively and we put our own tenants in. It just doesn't. So, I have 5 construction companies now and 5 independent leasing companies. And we just had to vertically integrate those businesses because it's not something you can outsource. I used to think that if I was doing $75 million a year in construction, that I would own warehouses full of materials. And that's actually not something that's ever really made sense, warehousing, but construction companies, brokerages, and management companies, we've had to bring in-house.
Mm-hmm. How many properties do you believe that you've personally or your companies have flipped, have actually done the rehab on?
Oh, easily. I bought my first deal in 2000. So, 19 years later, I'm well into the 7,000 property range.
7,000. So you've learned a few things throughout that time of so there's folks out there that may have, maybe they've never even flipped a house.
Right.
Or they've heard about flipping. What would you say to those folks?
When I was teaching high school and bought my first duplex in 2000, I didn't know anything about construction. I'm to this day, I've only pounded nails on one property. I meet contractors all the time who are like, yeah, I've always wanted to get into real estate. And I'm like, no, being a contractor is the worst thing for you. It's going to make you over rehab your properties. And, you know, obviously you have to be well-versed enough. For example, a great rule of thumb for your clients. For most construction jobs, a contractor's cost is materials and labor equal each other. Mm-hmm. If you know, they could go to Home Depot, if they can price out $5,000 in materials, the contractor's cost for that should be about $5,000 labor. It's a great rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that, you know, I was meeting with a contractor this morning. He was doing slate steps on one of my houses. And I said to him, he quoted me $4,000. And I said, well, how much were the materials? He said, $1,200. And I'm like, it's kind of heavy for labor because now he's at double, you know, he's got labor double materials. And he spent 20 minutes explaining to me why it was really highly skilled labor. And I agreed with him and I was cool with the price. But I know that his cost and his time is worth half of that, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand the level of skill to manage construction, but it's not as intimidating as I used to think. I don't have to know how to install the furnace. I just have to know what it costs and what level of skill is required to put it in, how long it takes. And then once you know that, then you can have an intelligent conversation with any contractor.
How long did it take you to really get up to speed on a flip?
You know, you only learn by doing. And so, you know, I've been a little bit screwed on every property I've ever bought.
That's about right. You know what? I had a very good mentor, and one of his buddies was a guy named Gold, who owned the 99-cent only stores. And Gold said, yeah, there's shrinkage. There's people that steal from you. My mentor was a guy named Jerry. He says, I can't stand it. I can't have stores because I know they're stealing. It's like one guy who ends up being the billionaire, of course, was the guy who could handle knowing that he's getting a little bit screwed on every deal, right? And it's like, hey, that's just part of life. Don't take it personally. Don't get all.
It's not. It's like I owned a bar. I've owned a couple of bars. And as a former bartender, every bartender steals. They either drink the profits, give the drinks away to their friends, or worst case scenario, sell the drinks and pocket the cash. But they all do one of those three. And once I got, I started thinking, you know, I'm just going to make them volunteer their theft. And so I went to the bars and I said, hey, you can have one drink per hour, because if you can't bartend and drink one drink per hour, then you're a non-functioning idiot, right? And then I want you to write that down. And I'll let you comp 10 draft beers a night, because that cost me, what, 3 cents a piece? But I want you to write it down. And instantly my margins went up 20%. Just by disclosing the theft.
It's kind of like, hey, you can steal a little, just don't steal a lot.
Yeah, just take a taste. I mean, don't drink my premium booze.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody still did, Aaron.
No doubt.
But anyway, back to the rehab and stuff. So a lot of folks, again, I'm personally not somebody who likes to flip houses.
Yeah.
I like to buy and hold. And yeah. Is that your typical person who comes to you?
So it's interesting. You know, obviously when I was teaching high school and didn't have any money, I started flipping. And a lot of people are drawn to real estate because they've seen the flipping shows. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake, flipping is active income.
Yep.
And I quit the high school and I finished my MBA and I realized that I had just traded a job that I loved of teaching and coaching for a job that I didn't really like and that, you know, that I didn't enjoy, which was flipping houses. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I plugged into the passive wealth development idea where you're, you know, flipping and making $500,000 in a year, you live off $100,000 and then you put $400,000 into passive investments, because passive income changes your life. You know, you can go on a trip to Europe and your passive rents all keep coming in. But if you go on a trip to Europe in the middle of 10 flips, it's a nightmare. And so I didn't understand active and passive income like I do today. And so I always say to people, you want to flip so you can hold. Obsess about making more money, because if you try to just buy one rental and let the rents buy the second property, in 30 years, you'll have more four or five properties. You can't let your passive build more passive. But if you let your active and you obsess about making more money so that you can buy passive assets, I'm buying three or four houses a month right now that I just hold free and clear.
And what does that do for you, by the way?
So, you know, it's tough, because to take $100,000 and buy one house that gives you $600 a month net cash flow, it's not sexy. People hate, you know, it's like there's no flipping show called Hold That Rental.
I think it's sexy. It'd be like three of us watching it.
Yeah, right. But when you have 10 bringing in $6,000 a month, that's a sexy number. And so, you know, 20 years into it, I have, you know, almost 250 assets that are free and clear now, and they throw off over $100,000 a month net. You know, that's
your property management is almost the same thing as well, right? You have properties under management where you're getting paid for every 10 properties you manage is probably like having one rental.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, 10% of the properties managed by my management companies are mine. I'm the biggest client. Right. And the whole reason I built it was because I couldn't find good management. And so when we sell a property to another investor, a passive investment, we manage it for them too. And when they want to get rid of it, we help them sell it. So, you know, that to me is what turnkey investing with us is. We have a really unique model that's, we have a couple of competitors, but not really, you know, not at the scale that we operate on.
It's interesting. So you're saying something about turnkey. It's interesting to hear you say that term because different markets where people go into, some are not turnkey markets. And so like the big market in the United States, which I always look at like Florida, Texas, and California, and you know, you have these big, huge markets, the Bay Area, horrific for buy and hold.
Yeah.
Terrific. Maybe good for flip because it's highly appreciated, expensive, big margins. And you see people going in there trying to make a turnkey portfolio on something that's it's just the wrong area. What kind of areas do you look for turnkey properties? Or no, I shouldn't say turnkey, but for buy and holds that are going to be nice return properties?
You know, I won't even look at a market for rentals if I can't make 7% net on the rents. You know, you can't make over 5% in California right now. You can't make over 3% in Hawaii. Even in Vegas, which is, I grew up in, I love Vegas. It's tough to make over 6%. Vegas is so sexy. People all over the world are buying Vegas. And so markets right now, like Ohio, we're opening an operation in Columbus over the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, Kansas City, you know, really your flyover states is the only place in the country right now where you can make 7% on the rents. After that, I want to see a business-friendly state government. You and I both know that, like, take a state like California, which is one of the most unfriendly business states in the country. Our bucks a year for an LLC, extra income tax if you make over a certain amount of money, getting permits for construction. I mean, I used to have to pull a permit to put a mailbox in a house. Things like that. Just working as a general contractor is incredibly expensive. Insurance is crazy. And so, because when you buy a passive investment, you're not buying a rental property, you're buying a business. Mm-hmm. And so we try to evaluate locations to see how business friendly they are.
What's a typical price of a house in an area that you're looking for? Like you're never going to get this with a $500,000 house, right? You're not going to get 7%. And we're not talking about gross rents here, guys. We're talking about what you actually take home and put in your pocket after your CapEx, after all the management fees, after paying, after everything else. What's the typical price of a house?
So I'd say 70 to about 110, 120,000 is the wheelhouse. And, you know, if you look at median home prices now at 250,000 across the country, there's a massive housing shortage for entry-level homes. And so the homes that we're selling to our clients, they're not war zone properties. They're blue-collar, middle-class neighborhoods, predominantly homeownership. So the idea, you know, the narrative for our clients is buy this house, collect rent for 3, 5, 7 years, and then sell it to a homeowner. Maybe be the bank, maybe seller finance it. But it's, you know, I just read an article yesterday that I posted online that said that 70% of Americans now live in an area that they can't afford to buy a home.
Yep,
and, you know, the reality is we're becoming a nation of renters, and home price appreciation has been 30% quicker than wage appreciation. And so more and more people are falling out of range to afford to buy a home. And so there's never been a better time to be a landlord because we've never had a lower home ownership rate, you know, since Fannie Freddie were created. You know, obviously prior to Fannie Freddie, banks didn't like to loan on homes and we had about a 40% home ownership rate, you know, pre-World War II. But since that time, our home ownership rate is dropping to its lowest level. And it's because of affordability.
What about the amount of debt that these millennials have from leaving these big college institutions? I mean, the college debt right now is what, at $1.5 trillion?
Yeah, I mean, you and I graduated high school in the 90s, and there was only a few, I think it was 700.
what did you just say, that we graduated high school in the 90s?
Wait, weren't you class of 90?
No. Older than that. I graduated college pretty close to that.
Oh, it's all right. So I was class of 91. So you were you watched Breakfast Club at your senior night, right?
Sophomore. But anyway, yes. Yeah, close.
So you look at, you know, early 90s, student loan debt was around $600-700 million. It was a tool that some people used. Now it's a crutch, and we're at over almost $2 trillion in student loan debt. And if you look at that based on, you know, how many people are going to college, that rate has increased by over 300%. And we have this cultural norm, just get that degree, irrespective.
It's done the hockey stick.
It's nuts. So you know what else has gone up is college tuition. It's just criminal what universities, just because they can and because no one looks at tuition as a value proposition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you look at this scandal that just came out of the news about parents paying these universities to get their kids in. Yep. And you know, I hear parents who know nothing about money say to their kids, just get that degree. And, you know, if they're getting a loser degree, like,
oh my gosh, got to be worth it.
Communications. So what would they make $26,000 a year with that degree? And now they get $200,000 in student loan debt. That's killing millennials' ability to buy property.
That's exactly right. So the rents are going up. Homeownership's been falling. I think it went up a little bit last year, but it was falling like a for years because they can't afford it. They can't get the loans. It's kind of funny. I always say that the English majors are subsidizing the engineering degrees because they're the same price. It's like, I'm like, we should have a whole bunch. Like, you should be inviting in all the English majors and political science and all these things where it's not really going to get you ready for a trade, and all these guys that are doing the engineering degrees and the medical stuff, and they're like, yeah, can we get some more of those, please?
Yeah,
pushing to stay down. It's horrible, but so you and I are seeing the exact same thing. Anybody who's in real estate sees this. Rents, people need a place to live. The jobless market, we have really, really ridiculously low unemployment. Anybody who hires right now is really feeling that pain.
Right.
Universally, people still need a place to stay.
Yep.
What happened here in Vegas before the last recession in 2008 was people were buying these $500,000, $600,000 houses expecting to rent them to somebody.
I know.
And you can't cash flow. You're going to get buried. And then other people were flocking to the Indianapolises of the world where you could buy houses at $50,000.
Yep.
And you had lots and lots of renters that needed those properties that were working. And so is that kind of the philosophy that you use as you're looking to find the house? It's in you said working class neighborhood, but it's places where there's commerce.
Yeah, we've kind of focused on two little secret sauces for our neighborhood. So, like, for example, in Charlotte, we've been religious about following light rail plans. Mm. So we've been trying to buy and sell property 5 years in front of where the light rail has already been approved and is going in. That's been a good strategy because the speculators don't start coming in until 6 months before it's done. Mm-hmm. And so that's been good because we, you know, for example, out on the west side of Charlotte, you had some what used to be really rough neighborhoods, kind of war zone-y, that we were buying them. And, you know, we just said to our clients, hey, look, here's the light rail. It's coming through. And as soon as it comes through, it's going to be Yuppieville around here. And sure enough, you know, these old low-income kind of dead neighborhoods are now trendy and hot because if you make $75,000 a year, you can't afford to live in downtown Charlotte, but you go one rail stop out and you can buy a house, that's a great thing. And so that's one thing that we've done. The other thing is, especially in markets like Dallas, Kansas City, Indianapolis, we've really focused on the first generation Hispanic neighborhoods. And so wherever, you know, there's pinata stores and taco food trucks and signs in Spanish, we've been trying to buy those neighborhoods because...
That's interesting. You're the second person I've heard that from this week, actually.
Yeah, you know, when I was 19, I did my Mormon mission to Venezuela and I speak fluent Spanish. And so I've had, you know, an insider's understanding of the Latino community. They're savers. They have a cultural value on saving. They hate renting. They see it as a waste of money. And so, for example, I'll have a rental that I'll rent to a Hispanic client for a year or two. Once I see they're good, then I'll offer to sell them the home and they'll give me $20,000-$30,000 down. And then I have no more maintenance. I have no more taxes. I have no more insurance. I'm just getting a check every month as the bank. And so we love working with those communities because they're coming in, buying homes, buying businesses, and turning neighborhoods. And so those are our two kind of, but probably the third thing that we do is we look for what are called public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. So every month I scour the city council minutes in the cities that I'm in. And it's, you know, it's like a roadmap. Hey, we're going to revive, you know, like for example, in Indianapolis Speedway, the Indy 500 track is owned by a private family. Mm-hmm. The city of Indianapolis just gave them $50 million to put lights in on the track so they can do some night races. Mm-hmm. And they've spent about $500 million of the city's money revitalizing the neighborhood around the track. Mm-hmm. So seeing that in the city council meeting 4 years ago, we started buying in front of that. You know, so public-private partnerships where the city's taking out a bond to revitalize an area, that's like a massive opportunity for appreciation and growth.
That's pretty cool.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
What's the biggest mistake you've ever made in like picking an area, or like just so you can, you've been pre-disastered so you can tell everybody else, hey, don't do what I did.
So my biggest mistake is I waited too long to hire a bookkeeper and a CPA. I did my own taxes, which is so stupid. I did my own books, which is idiocy. And then as my company grew, it was still my blind spot because there were people that I trusted who stole money from me. And you and I have talked about that because I came to you like in tears after an employee that I loved on a personal level ripped me off. Not having good financial controls, saying they're a good person, I trust them, and they have access to your checkbook. It's just the most stupid thing that and they steal my money. My company's money, the rents and the security, that's all locked down, double controls. It's my personal money that I have this blind spot about, whether it's with contractors. Trust shouldn't be part of your business. Trust can be a nice frosting as part of dessert, but it's not the entree. And you need, Tony Robbins says it best. He says, making money is a science, it's not an art. And once you learn the science of how to build a printing press, you don't decide, I don't need those bolts, I don't need those screws. You just build it and then it prints money for you. And trust is not part of a business printing press. Trust has no place in that. Trust is something that when you find out you can trust someone, like your assistant, she's amazing, you trust her, but it's not part of how you do business. It's just a fringe benefit that now you have someone in your life you can trust, but you don't have business systems that depend on finding trustworthy people. It's a huge mistake that I've made with contractors over the years, that I've made with employees, that I've made with partners. And so I just don't, I've eliminated all systems that incorporate trust, whether it's how I work with there's always checks and balances, there's always dual signature, there's always two sets of eyes on everything. And
It's interesting you're saying this as opposed to, oh man, I bought this really crappy house and I thought I could make it into something and I sunk a whole bunch of money into it. So you're saying it's not even the properties themselves, it's a systems issue.
Yeah, like for example, in Indianapolis, we're managing 1,500 homes and I have one person that all he does all day is drive to check on the work that contractors are doing before I give him a check. Because I don't trust them anymore when they say, yeah, it's done. I just say, okay, cool, well, I'll pay you when we've put our eyes and independently verified the work. Because I got, too many contractors would do 95% of the job and want 100% of the pay. And, screening tenants, I have two sets of eyes that look at every application because one person who's getting a $500 leasing bonus is going to be more inclined to kind of slide someone through the door. Mm-hmm. And so trust is a horrible principle. It's a fringe benefit. It shouldn't be part of any of the business that you do. And it doesn't mean that you're jaded. It just means that you recognize that given the opportunity, most people will take a shortcut. It's like when I taught high school, there's a reason why the teacher sits there during tests. It's not because they're accusing everyone of being honest, but you want to minimize the opportunity. You don't want to even give them the choice. Mm-hmm.
What about your biggest success? It sounds like you have a bunch. So let's just narrow it down, like the 10,000 foot view. What's the biggest thing that if somebody's just getting started out, or just say somebody's been doing this for 10 years and they're just not getting anywhere, what's the biggest game changer that you ran into?
So disconnecting myself from the ego of staking my flag and saying, this is what I do, right? When I was doing my work, my MBA, people were like, they were myopic about how they wanted to use that degree, right? Mm-hmm. And take, for example, in 2011, prior to 2011, Wall Street didn't buy any houses. They were out of the single family home game. In 2012, $8 billion was raised. And now, fast forward, Wall Street owns 3% of the homes in America right now. But prior to that, they weren't at the auction. So imagine 2012, Wall Street comes in the auction and they say, they start bidding against me for deals. And of course, they'll pay 40% more than what I would pay, right? And so I watched investors just go, oh, great. I'm a home flipper. How am I going to keep flipping homes? I can't compete with these guys. And it would devastate their business. Whereas I went, okay, well, I can't compete against them, but maybe I can buy in front of them and flip flip houses back to them. And I can't compete against it, but they need someone to do construction. They need someone to do leasing. They need somebody to manage. So not saying I'm a flipper and I buy at the auction and stake my flag on that. I say money's in motion. And maybe that means that I switch to an Airbnb model. And maybe that, you know, now I'm obsessed about mobile home parks. And I have two dealerships now, two manufactured home dealerships. And I'm in that business because I could say, well, I'm a single family home guy. You know, I don't care. I'm a money guy. And if it's under the umbrella of real estate, I just think people want to, are like, I'm a commercial guy. You know, I only want to do multifamily.
You're just limiting your opportunities. So you're just
saying, to a fault, they hang their hat on that.
Tell me about the mobile home. So like, so you're actually about manufactured home dealership because you own the parks and you're putting the houses in the parks, or what do you?
Yeah. And then literally we just bought some commercial land and, you know, you're driving around town and you see like the three modular homes on wheels in the like dealership. We actually have one of those now. So I just put a modular home on a lot in a permanent foundation, right? Mm-hmm. I bought the lot in Idaho for $15,000. I put the home in there for about 80. So I'm into it, 95,000. I'm going to throw it on MLS for 140,000. There are no homes. There are no homes. And I'm doing it permanent foundation. So it's FHA. It's appraised as a stick built. There are no homes under $200,000. And so we see this as a way to like cure the affordability crisis that's happening in housing right now. And then the other area is, you know, I just bought a park, another park. We have several parks, but we're doing this park 55 and older because your average 65-year-old right now has 170,000 net worth. That's average. And
oh my God.
20% of our 65-year-olds are living only on Social Security. So, you know, like I just sold a trailer to a grandma from New York living in Florida. I sold it to her for $30,000 at 7% interest for 15 years. And so she's like $600 a month to the park for the space rent, $200 a month to me for the mortgage. Her Social Security check's $1,200. That's what she's living. And when you have, you know, we have this retirement crisis with our boomers that's just as severe as the home buying crisis that millennials are seeing, but for different reasons. Basically, you know, since 1972, when they got away from pensions, we haven't done a good job of saving enough and investing enough. You know,
people. So you're really putting yourself into that area. Is that where you're focusing right now?
Is
kind of more affordable, good quality housing for seniors?
Yeah, and for a while, you know, it's funny. I used to, so my here's my philosophy right now. I hate rehabbing old mobile homes. I'll just put a new one in. But I never buy new houses. I rehab the houses. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how they're kind of like the opposite strategy. So we're buying parks and getting rid of all the old trailers and putting brand new ones in. But, you know, I built like 15 homes over the last couple of years and I'll never be a builder again. It's the worst gig ever. You know, if you want to make 6%, build houses.
Yeah, you get to make it once too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, being a builder sucks because cities like, you know, trying to get a new construction project approved. And they're like, well, we want a park and then we want a community pool and you can't use vinyl siding. You have to use all stone. I mean, they just start loading all this criteria on that just makes it not feasible.
They want you way up here. They're like, hey, as long as you're building.
Right, right.
I'll give you my wish list.
Yeah, yeah. Put this trail in on half your land. So it's a running trail for the neighbors. You know?
But what about those guys? But, you know, what about the guys down the street? They're already built.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll never build another brand new home, but I'll probably never rehab an old trailer again. So, you know, just stuff that you could never figure out if you weren't in the game.
So you're not going the high end and you don't want to deal the low end. You're going right in the middle. So
yeah. Yeah. I don't want the junkyard dog single wide 1965 trailer. Forget that.
They're awesome. Beautiful. All right. So you work with investors all over the country too. Give me a thumbnail sketch on what it would look like when somebody comes and works with you guys over at Alpine.
So we're really good at helping investors passively invest their money. And so I have, like right now, I got Japanese investors that are buying 10 houses a month from us. Mm-hmm. They want their money in US dollars and they just want the passive investment. So that's one type of client who just has money in a savings account or I get a lot of people that cash out annuities, right? Because they're like, the annuity sucks. I thought it was a guaranteed 4%. That was before expenses. I'm making 2%. Then we get a whole group of investors who didn't know that they can take their IRA and buy a house or their qualified retirement plan. They thought it had to be invested in the market. And so we work with a lot of investors who are taking retirement money, 401k, IRA money, and then having the IRA buy a home that we sell to them and then we manage it for them. And so it's a passive way to really increase the returns over what they've been making having their money with Merrill Lynch or Fidelity.
They're taking it away from the broker, actually putting it into something that they can jump on, spit on, stomp on. That's actually physical. It's not just right. Stock out there. That's the soup du jour. How do people actually work with you, Aaron?
We have a website, irarental.com, that they can reach out to us. We do a monthly event that's free in Indianapolis. If they want to reach out to us at the irarental.com. I also have a Facebook page, Alpine Capital Solutions, that I use to post research about markets. I don't sell anything on it. It's just empirical research. I spend a couple hours a day doing market research. That's Alpine Capital Solutions Facebook page. They can like that and they can message me directly if they have questions on that. We're pretty easy to get a hold of. Yeah.
And then when you do an event, you said you had properties all over the place. So it sounds like Kansas City. You're mentioning cities that we hear about all the time, just because I work with the end clients and where people tend to flock together when they're going into a marketplace where they're improving it. You know, people are buying the houses and rehabbing it. Usually you don't buy a house and just rent it. You buy a house, rehab it, and rent it.
Right.
Or you're buying it from a rehabber, like, again. So with Alpine, is this something where they come in and they buy it, you fixed it up, they don't have to do anything, they just buy it and put it immediately into their rental portfolio?
Yeah, so like we have an event in Indianapolis this weekend. I have 70 homes that I already bought that I fixed up and that are rented. We have 50 people coming. In fact, we capped the event at 50. But behind those 70 deals, I have another 150 that are getting rented right now or getting rehab or that we just bought.
Are there tenants in all these or are these just rehabs that are just sitting there vacant?
Rented. So the day that somebody buys, in fact, we won't close on the deal. And so, you know, sometimes we'll have somebody pick a deal out that we're just finishing construction on. We'll delay the closing until the tenant goes in.
Until there's a tenant.
So they're getting a completely brand new rehabbed home with a brand new tenant.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
So they find out more. So what is it? IRARental.com?
Yep. IRARental.com or just message me on our Alpine Capital Solutions Facebook page.
Cool. Well, I want to say thank you for hanging out with me. If there's one last thing, like if there's one thing that you would tell people right now, keep their eyes open, like what sounds like you're getting into the kind of the elder groups and taking care of some serious needs in society. But if there was one thing that you would tell somebody, really pay attention to right now, what would it be?
So I'm I track the Fed's what they're doing with interest rates, because obviously that trickles back to what the mortgage rate is. And, you know, now that the Fed announced for 2019, they're not going to raise the rate. I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, people, you know, the 30-year fix is back down to 4. So I track that. I track new starts for construction because I want to see, you know, builders are usually they're a pretty finicky crowd. And if they're not building, that's a bad sign. And then I really look at, you know, trends like Airbnb, which is hot right now. If you're looking for a way to make some extra money on the side in real estate, and Airbnb is a great way to do that. And you know, just committing to education, but not just education, because I meet people that are addicted to seminars. Education married to action. So, you know, it's like I meet people that come to one of your trainings and then they leave and they haven't set up their trust. They don't have
we get that. Right? You need a horse to water.
Yeah, I know. And so it's got to be the education with the action. And I won't take another training until I've tried to make money. That's how I knew I didn't want to be a builder anymore. You know, yeah, done with that.
A lot of business owners, they just like going and picking up the nuggets. They always say, hey, I'll spend the time to learn, because there's one thing that might give me a little bit of an advantage, one piece of information that maybe gives me a little bit of an advantage or some better insight so I can make better decisions. It's always that one little thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, cool, buddy. Thanks for hanging out. And again, this is a podcast, so you can go back and listen to yourself. You didn't make any predictions, so I can't make fun of you at some point in the future saying, hey, look at that.
I will predict in 2019, the stock market will lose 10% of its value. And for the first time ever, housing won't drop. That's my prediction.
Oh, my God. Well, now you're on. Now you're recorded. All right, Aaron. Thanks for hanging out with us.
All right, man.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.